Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown. Today I'll be talking to Don Hader Markowitz, one of the editors of Transgender Rights and Politics, Groups, Issue Framing, and Policy Adoption. The book is published from University of Michigan Press. I hope that you really enjoyed this interview that I did with Don. Welcome back to the podcast. As I mentioned, I have the real pleasure to have the editor of Transgender Rights and Politics, Groups, Issue Framing, and Policy Adoption with us today. Donald Hader Markell, how are you doing today, Don?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well, and it's a nice day in New York and a pleasure to have read your book. Before we get to talking about all of the interesting stuff in it, maybe you could just talk a little bit about yourself and also the co-editor on this volume.
Sure. Just to introduce Jamie Taylor, who's was sort of the primary editor on this book. I was sort of a secondary editor on this project. Jamie's an associate professor of political science and public administration at the University of Toledo. I am professor of political science at the University of Kansas. We both have interests in public policy generally, but in LGBT politics specifically.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, I think, read for anyone who's interested in, you know, sort of the broad ideas of state policy change and state politics, but also in some of the specific issues related to transgender people and transgender policymaking. I'm always interested in how these edited volumes come together. You sort of alluded to a little bit of Jamie's lead on this, but I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about how this came together. Was this the result of a workshop that had been held or something else? How did you seek out these different chapter authors?
So that's part of it, the genesis of the idea, and that's part of why I call Jamie the lead editor, is the genesis of the idea came from her, and she had a number of pieces working with a number of different co-authors on this topic, and she had approached University of Michigan about this collection, and what she decided to do was bring in an additional editor with some other perspectives, but the primary goal of the project was to produce a volume that was the first of its kind in terms of an empirical perspective on transgender rights, policies, and social movement activity that really isn't in the marketplace. Basically, what's out there now tends to be more activist-orientated and is not empirical social science, which is fine and makes its own contribution to knowledge. We just wanted to produce something a little bit different from what is out there, and even the articles that exist, some of which Jamie has done, a few other authors, is really pretty recent. So even on the article side, there's not much out there in the market at this point.
Yeah, and I think the result is novel in that way, and just the methods that some of the authors use really does. I can see how it would call for multiple editors because of how sort of varied some of the approaches are. Results in something very interesting. At the start of the book, you have a couple of U.S. maps related to transgender policies. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you define a policy as transgender or what you call trans-inclusive and what the, you know, sort of if you give us a snapshot of transgender policy that we can glean from just these first two maps.
So the typical sort of perspective on sort of trans policies is the notion, and here I'll just say, often use the word trans as just a sort of shortcut rather than transgender. The policies typically are in the vein of similar policies first enacted in part to prevent discrimination against African Americans as well as women as well as ethnic groups. The notion of non-discrimination laws that basically ban typically discrimination on the basis of employment, accommodations, and a few other things. Those kinds of laws were first pushed for by the LGBT movement, in particular to protect with the language of sexual orientation being included, either amending existing laws or creating new laws for those protections. And then what we have in terms of the transgender community is trying to include language in those anti-discrimination laws that protects individuals on the basis of gender identity. So rather than typically usually using the term transgender, the term gender identity is used. And for many of these laws, it's been a process of going back to existing laws and amending them. So even if there are protections on the banning discrimination on the basis of in employment on the basis of sexual orientation, going back to that law and adding the language gender identity to those policies at the local level as well as at the state level.
And where are the sort of who are the leaders here? Which communities, which states stepped forward and made some of the first trans-inclusive policies, either sort of new policies or, as you mentioned, making changes in existing policies?
So it sort of somewhat follows the pattern that we saw for laws banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, with coastal states, West Coast and East Coast, being some of the first to consider and adopt these policies, but also a few states that have a more progressive history in the Midwest, with the exception of Wisconsin, which was the first state to adopt a law banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. They were not one of the early adopters for including gender identity. But certainly on the East Coast and the West Coast, and then just a scattering throughout the Midwest. So it really fits the same kind of geographic pattern that you can observe for the adoption of sexual orientation laws.
Now, what are the themes early in the book, and I'm not sure if it was the chapter that you were one of the co-authors of in addition to the editor, is this competition between groups representing trans individuals and those representing the LGBT community more broadly. I wonder if you could walk us through a little bit of the history of common cause and conflict between these communities, because it really does seem like one of those pieces of a couple of chapters. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the notion that, even within the broad LGBT movement, there has been a process, I think, that in some ways you can see come to its fruition now with the adoption of overturning of bans on same-sex marriage, that early on in the 70s and 80s, a lot of what the LGBT movement had to do was sort of educate the public and educate policymakers about what the concerns of that movement were and that community were. Provide evidence, for example, that there is actually discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. And that process obviously took some time and occurred more rapidly in some states versus others. But then for the trans community as part of this broader movement, it also turned out that being the sort of cluster of sexual minorities pushing for a variety of new kinds of policies, the trans community had some different priorities than, say, just the gay or lesbian community. For example, the anti-discrimination laws pushed for by the LGBT movement, those weren't necessarily the same priority for the trans community. They were concerned more with making it easier, for example, to change sex identification on government documents versus pushing for anti-discrimination laws. And within the LGBT movement, the education of the broader public, the LGBT movement itself needed to be educated about the trans community, what their concerns were, what the issues were for that community. And because the trans community is such a small group, even within the LGBT movement, I think it took more time to educate within the movement and certainly then external to the movement about what the concerns of this community were. And also because it's a small group, they simply didn't have the resources to push their priorities within the broader movement as being the most important priorities the movement should pursue. So what you see, for example, in the consideration, say, in a particular state of a new anti-discrimination law, that when the legislators, for example, in a state legislature might balk at the inclusion of the language on gender identity and not be familiar with it and what it really would mean to include that language, that LGBT groups would withdraw that portion of the policy, it just in pursuit of including the sexual orientation language. So the trans community was sort of left by the wayside. And you see this in national politics as well with many of these issues. And not just now being able to sort of come back to these policies and try to include that gender identity language that wasn't included when the laws were first adopted.
And at this point, I think the sort of the well-known LGBT groups are well-known, but much less so for the transgender group. So who are we talking about specifically? Tony Nouns has an interesting chapter sort of to this point about sort of who the players are, but I wonder if you could sort of briefly mention a couple of the groups that have emerged as the real players, because they're even if they are, they're still, you know, relatively small in how many people would know about them. So who are we talking about?
Well, in terms of which are the strongest groups or which groups have the most influence, I mean, the sort of interesting thing is most of the groups are relatively small, don't have a lot of resources, and that's partly why, in fact, the trans community has had to rely on sort of existing broader LGBT groups. And part of the effort there has been just to even have the language of gender identity and the trans community included, say, in the mission statements of groups. So even some traditional groups like Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays didn't have that language in their mission statements, or certainly in their titles. Groups like the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, which just recently changed its name, it wasn't until the 1990s that many of these groups began to include trans-specific language in their mission statements, as well as in their in some cases in their names.
Let's sort of take it to now, and one of the chapters by Sellers and my colleague Rod Colvin talks about this change over time and sort of what was happening prior to the 2000s and what's starting to happen now. What's the difference? Where are we now? What are the vanguard issues? Have there been issues that have been reconciled in many places? And where are we looking for where the current controversies are?
With the trans community specifically, or with the LGBT?
Yeah.
I think with the trans community specifically, I think the priorities still are some of this documentation, issues with healthcare, issues with trans youth in particular, which oftentimes has been a little bit more difficult to address some of the health and security issues for trans youth have been some priorities within the trans community. And I mean, interestingly enough, even as so much progress has been made on the issue of same-sex marriage, for a lot of trans individuals, it's just simply not a priority kind of issue like it is within amongst lesbian and gay men that are pushing for that. So I think that coming back to some of those issues now, some of those trans issues, and prioritizing those, the space is available on the agenda, basically, within the broader LGBT movement to pursue some of these issues and be more comfortable with it. I think there's also been, as I say about this education within the movement and even external to the movement, there's more knowledge now about what issues are faced by the trans community and what we really mean by terms like gender identity. I think that's more broadly understood. One of the things that weren't able to include in the book was public attitudes about transgender rights or knowledge about the trans community, in part because there's not much research or not much available data out there to know what does the public know, what do they understand. But there have been a few polls conducted, and it's pretty clear that at least a majority of the American public now at least thinks that has a sense of what we really mean by terms like transgender, or what we're really talking about with terms like gender identity. And I think that's partly a function of the education efforts of the broader LGBT movement, but also changes of what we've seen in popular culture and the representation of the LGBT community. There's a lot more familiarity with a lot of the issues. And that's partly resulted then in not only changes in public knowledge, but also in public attitudes about the community.
Yeah, as the editor of this volume, one of the editors of this volume, is there a chapter in the collection that surprised you, either in the way that the researchers went about answering their questions, or maybe even just the findings, something that you learned as somebody who was editing this really interesting research?
I'm not sure that there was anything that was a huge surprise to me. I think in some ways, the work that Tony Nouns has done in this area is always a little bit interesting to me, partly because he comes at this perspective from an interest group perspective and then heavily based in sort of theoretical perspectives about interest groups birth, interest group survival, and interest group death, relying on a pretty sophisticated theoretical perspective on that. That's always been a little bit of an interest to me, and actually it's sort of a unique perspective because the way he's done it really hasn't been done in many other for many other types of interest groups out there, even though the theory itself, as I say, is pretty well developed.
Yeah, it's Tony's work is great, and so many of the pieces in here are just so interesting, almost could stand alone and be developed into full books. The book, again, is Transgender Rights and Politics, Groups, Issue Framing, and Policy Adoption, edited by Jamie Taylor and Don, who was with us today. Don, thank you very much for your time today.
Sure thing. Thank you.